going to reference Justina on two things this morning she doesn't know about. One is, she told me this morning that her brother was a miracle camp, which is our kids camp in Michigan. And that while he was up there, he was at camp with the Bass students who were here this summer, which we plan to do next summer. And that was really, really cool. And that if you want to beat somebody in basketball, you can beat them. But if you want to lose in soccer, you can play soccer. So, but that was just an encouragement to me. This flag is their flag. In fact, there were a couple of situations in the World Cup when it seemed that the celebration, or the even one guy took his shirt off, and I saw that he had a Bass message on his shirt. It's a really interesting people group. And we have an incredible opportunity next summer to welcome them into our lives. And so I will be going to our convention. Bill and Susie will be going in a couple of weeks. And at that time, I'll meet with our connection to that whole possibility. And we'll come back with more information. We'll have some meetings here about what it's all about. Because we need to commit to that by, I think, December. How many kids we would want to host somebody. So that was a great reminder. Thank you for that. The other thing is this. I walked in the church, and Justina said, "You're so blue today." Well, let me tell you, I'm not just blue. I'm floored today. When I was getting ready to get dressed, Sue says, "Hey, I want you to wear your floor pants." And I said, "What?" And she said, "I know where they are. I'll go get them." And so she comes in and she says, "Here, when you wear these, you look like somebody from Florida." Do you see it? I mean, that's a really strange way to get into our topic today. But when it comes to my passion, and Sue and I have this come let us reason together kind of view of things, and that's what we're talking about these weeks. We're talking about developing a conversational relationship with God. A relationship that is give and take, that is back and forth, that is genuine. Christianity is so distinct from any of the other belief systems in the world because Christianity says this about God. And we sang it this morning when we, in one of our, maybe our first hymn, we had unknown in speaking of God. And how is that so? And here we are today worshiping Him. How can it be unknown? Well, this is what that means. That God is transcendent. He transcends any of our ability to understand just how enormously incredible He is. We can't know, we can't exhaust who God is. He is beyond our ability to completely understand. He's transcendent. And our faith says that. But here's the thing about our faith that is so remarkable. It also says that He is imminent. That He is as close as our next breath. Our faith teaches us that in Him we live and breathe and move, exist, and have our being. He is that in Him. He literally is the one who keeps life going. He keeps our lives going. That we are. Don't know if I'll see you next week or not. We're excited for this soon coming thing. But know this, and Daniel prays for all the babies, prays for Sarah's baby and your baby and all the babies that are coming our way every Wednesday night, that the Lord is imminent with your son right now. And Sarah with your baby right now. The Lord knows everything about them. He is that near. They're kind of unknown folks to us right now. We're just full of hope.
But he knows.
And that's why we trust him, because he's so close. So he's beyond our ability, and he's closer than we can even understand. He knows the beginning from the end. He knows the hairs of our head. He knows all those things. And the thing about our faith is that Jesus is the center of it. No other faith has anybody like Jesus, because he has us. And he wants us to commune with him. It isn't just a one-way street. It isn't just the Islamic pouring out of self in kind of a constant effort to please. It's Jesus saying, because of who I am pleased with you. So we come here today, and I want to encourage us to understand that the God to whom I'm going to suggest we can develop the kind of relationship that we can argue with him is so near, is so intimate with us. In our call to worship, we have the words of the Lord through Isaiah. These words have rung throughout the centuries, even the millennia, that say something very necessary in our understanding of God. These strong yet simple words. Come is the beckoning of God to come to him. And then he says this amazing thing. Let us reason together. God has made us as what we'll call sentient beings. We have minds. We reason. We are made in his image. That separates us from all creation. He wants us to know that this is not just a heart relationship. As Ben said, said this very well, that sometimes our emotions are the very first thing we want to take to God. But he's saying, but also bring your memory and your reason to this relationship. And so he's inviting us to come and reason. Well, what does that look like? Is it like coming to court and you have God as judge and you are the lawyer for the defense, or maybe you're the defendant representing yourself? I think in some ways it is like that. Because God is the standard maker and keeper. But here is what is so beautiful about our faith. Our advocate, the one who's arguing on our behalf, is God himself. It's the Lord Jesus. He is our intercessor. He's the one that comes between us and this perfect, righteous, absolutely perfect God. And he comes and says, I'm here on your behalf. And that takes the weight off our shoulders. That means we walk into the courtroom and we walk in humbly, but we don't walk in defeated because of who our advocate is. Now, before the Lord Jesus lived and died and lived again, a man whom God said is the one that is most like what my heart is like, and a very, very broken man he was, King David, had an interesting argument with God. And we're going to read that today in Psalm 143. So will you please turn to Psalm 143.
I teach this today as an encouragement.
It is an every week reality in our church family that someone or several someones have a crisis of a need for God to show them that He's there. We had someone blow into the church this morning early with that beat and had to leave. But I'm telling you, it happens all the time. And it's a good thing that they come, that you come, and that we express this understanding that we need this. Well, that's modeled to us by King David, the man who led a nation of God's people. And so,
Psalm 143.
Now, I use the term arguing, and I use that with an understanding. The understanding is this, that God is beyond our ability to change. And so often when we are arguing, we're trying to change that person's mind. This isn't about changing who God is or how He views things. But this is about us being able to know that what's on our heart, or what burdens our soul, or what is driving us, will be heard, will be considered, and will receive His best attention. We couldn't ask for more, because His ways are perfect. Let's look at this. And having been an English teacher and being a writer, I appreciate the writing of this psalm, because this is emphatic and it's imperative. Remember what an imperative sentence is? It is a command. You must. I'm telling you to do something. David is coming before the Lord boldly with commands. His first one is, hear my prayer, O Lord. He has the temerity, in other words, the courage, to know that God can be approached that boldly. Now, as I said, he lived before Jesus. After Jesus, in the New Testament, Paul tells us that we should boldly approach the throne of what? No. Grace. You might say grace? Sorry, that was a little pop quiz. It's the same place, isn't it? But I like the throne of grace. And we're going to get into that next. We are to boldly approach the throne by which we receive, at which we receive God's favor. God's favor. That's grace. God's riches at Christ's expense. G-R-A-C-E. So we boldly approach the Lord, not because of who we are, but because of Jesus. Is that clear? That is what takes the burden off of us. That's what provides us perfect access to the Father, because of grace. And now, real heart, give ear to my pleas for mercy. What is mercy? It's connected to grace, isn't it? Mercy is God not giving us the judgment we deserve. It's God's staying of our judgment, and rather giving us kindness and giving us healing. Friends, we don't know. We don't know how much mercy God pours on us. But we know that we live day to day, moment to moment, in a sense of security because of him. That's mercy. In your faithfulness, another area. Answer me. This is not an exercise in futility here. Futility is a very important understanding of what life is all about. There was no futility in the universe until the fall of man. And when Adam sinned, we all sinned. And with that sin, Genesis tells us, a whole realm of futility entered into our existence. And I look forward to that new heaven and new earth where there's no futility. Futility is a burden. And David is saying, because of who you are, I ask you to make this plea perfectly effective. Perfectly effective. No futility. And why? In your righteousness. Again, not because of me, but because of you. So when we're going to come to God with our argument, we're doing so because he's perfect. I was working on this week, and Sue and I were just going down the road, and I said, this week, I'm going to talk about arguing with God. So what do you think of that? And she did that, and I said, oh my, I certainly argued with you. And she started to rattle off times when she has come to God and asked the question, why? You see the cover of our program is this question, why? That, friends, is an acceptable approach to God. David himself asked questions like, why did he even prosper? Why did my enemies prosper? Why? They're bad people. I'm a God who's seeking you. Why aren't you doing anything about it? We have Job, wonderful, wonderful Job. And he says, hey, I'm preparing my argument for you. But both of these guys, never, not once, even though Job's wife told him to do it, neither one of them ever curses God. Neither one of them ever questioned God's goodness. And that's important for us to remember. When we bring our pleas to God, don't forget this, they cannot be couched or surrounded by, I plead for you to approve this sin. I plead for you to approve this my selfish motive. I plead for you to forget your righteousness for a minute and just give me my way. Leave that at the door. Don't enter the courthouse of death. Because that is not what David is doing. It's interesting here. David is coming with specific requests for relief, direction, providential favor, but all of it is surrounded by this grand request. Make me ugly. Make me someone whom you delight in. Make me a reflection of you. When we come to God with our argument, and when Sue went through her list, and it was right at the top of her mind, I had to really commend her that I did these things. That none of them ever accused God of being bad. They were just, why? And the why question is, help me through this. Help me through this. Some of us today, need to be able to come to God in the privacy of our own world and just be able to say, here's what I'm thinking about. You know it already, but I need to express it.
walk, help me, Jesus.
Let's go on.
Enter not,
again,
a command. Enter not into judgment with your servant, for no one living is righteous before you. Lord, in this plea for mercy, I recognize it. If you count my sins against me, I can't stand there.
Again,
Jesus, he is why we can come to God. David, of course, was someone whom at different times in his life had people trying to kill him, including members of his own family. A very unpleasant family reunion. That's big. Trying to kill him. He says, "For the enemy has pursued my soul. He has crushed my life to the ground. He has made me sit in darkness like those long dead." Well, none of us are king, and I don't think any of us have literal family or enemy who is trying to kill us. But we do have it. And that enemy does want to crush our souls. We can say this again. "Therefore, my spirit faints within me, my heart within me is appalled." Just how badly is David hurting? This is the same guy who, in other Psalms, is just ebullient in his praise for God and his life, and, "Oh Lord, you are this, and you made me that, and my heart is appalled." He is at a very low point. And then our song. "I remember." Will you remember? "I remember the days of old. I meditate on all that you have done. I ponder the work of your hands. I stretch out my hands," that graphic, "I stretch out my hands to you. My soul thirsts for you like a parched land." This developing a conversational relationship with God, if you want it to be rich, real, effective, then don't check your memory at the door. You will be bolstered up when you remember what he's done. You will be strengthened when you recall that he has always been there, and always provided, and always led you faithfully. Another command. "Answer me quickly, O Lord, my spirit fails." Just how real is this in our experience? Doesn't it for some of us? We feel like we can't wait around. We feel like we have to have some encouragement from God now. And I'm going to encourage you to have that kind of relationship with God where you can say to him, "Please encourage me now. I am faint in my spirit, and I need your encouragement." That is an argument that I believe our loving and faithful God will not turn back. Remember how I said we have an enemy who would crush us? The scriptures promise us that God will not crush us. He will not stamp out a bruised person. He will not. Here's the truth. Sometimes, in our brokenness, in the futility of our minds, our heart, our lives, we have to get to the point of feeling like we're appalled. We have to get to the point where we need help now before we come to God with all that we are. True. Because when we don't feel like we need him, no problem. It's a great gift to meet him. And it comes from his hand. David is at that point. He has people who want his life. David is recalling that he was anointed to be the king. And that he was chosen. And the whole story of David being chosen is just remarkable. Because he's the last of those sons that would have been chosen by any board of choosers. But he's who God chose. And he's recalling God's call on his life. If you are a Christian, you have a blessed call on your life. And just as I encourage you to come to God and say, I need an answer quickly, I encourage you to remember that God has a call on your life. And that you are not your own, as Paul tells us, because you've been bought with a price. And the price is the Lord Jesus. Answer me quickly, O Lord, my spirit fails. Again, a command. Hide not your face from me. See, the intensity of this is such, folks. He's not saying, will you please hide not your face from me? Hide not your face from me. Don't do it. I can't live with you turning away from me. If you know the story of David, you know that he wrote Psalm 51. Psalm 51 is that great psalm of repentance. After he had committed adultery and murder and sabotage and lie, he comes to God in brokenness and says, don't hide from me. Take not your spirit from me. This is the same God. He understands that God's face, we don't see it literally, neither did he, but the relationship, the presence of God in our spirits, we come to that and we say, I have to have it. I have to have your presence. Hide not your face from me, lest I be like those who go down to the pit. We don't want to go down to the pit. Let me hear in the morning of your steadfast love. Why? I think that's a very beautiful and simple bit of psychology here. Let me start my day understanding something essential. Your steadfast love. I know this. If we start our day messed up, and by messed up I mean we've lost all perspective on God's love, that day is just waiting to overwhelm us. If we start our day reminded, enriched by His steadfast love, we have had the breakfast of champions. And I mean, it's a really bad metaphor. But it's true. Just practically speaking, I'm not a morning person. I'm horrible at mornings. At night, I'm fine. That's just my biorhythms. Not good for some things, really great for others. But I know this, that the morning sets the tone for the day. And it's really important for me, not a morning person, and some of you aren't, as soon as a morning person, she comes out of bed ready to go. I'm a parent, I have to do it, but we were talking today, she and I, about a devotional life. I encourage all of us that we must have a devotional life. There are some of you right now that I know are looking for God's faith. Are you looking hard enough that you will discipline yourself to approach him on a consistent basis? Approach him in studying his revealed expression, and approach him by coming for his face in prayer. You want his favor, you want his direction. Will you have the discipline? Will you have the respect to come before him in discipline? I suggest you find a way to do it early. To do it early. Maybe it happens over breakfast. Maybe it happens while you're driving to work. Just put a verse in front of your mind and cry out to him. Get the morning started with favor and make that become your life pattern. Let me hear in the morning of your steadfast love, for in you I trust. I love this part about presenting our argument to God. And God already says for us to do this. Throw it back on him. That is what the transaction has to be placed. Throw it back on me. Remind me, because it reminds you that I can be trusted. This whole thing about the spiritual life comes down to trusting and obeying. And I had a professor of New Testament theology that said he boiled down the life of the believer into a hyphenated word, trust, obey. It wasn't trust and obey, like the old hymn, but there's no other way to be happy in Jesus but to trust and obey. There was something tighter and richer, and it was, if you really trust, you will obey. Those two things are inseparable. When we come to God with our arguments, we are saying to him, I trust you. I trust your decision in this matter. You are the righteous judge. Make me know the way I should go, for to you I lift up my soul. This was our prayer last Wednesday night. I have been flooded by requests from some of you for direction. Life's issues. I need direction. We need help. We don't know what to do. I was studying this chapter in preparation for today, and I thought, what better way for us to pray for some people who need direction than this mind condition? Make me know the way I should go. Again, that's a command. That's an imperative. I'm not being laissez-faire. I'm not being lazy about this request. I'm commanding you, God, to make it plain to me. I need your direction. Make me know. Friends, he's imminent. He's transcendent, so he's able. He can do anything. But he's imminent in that our very life is wrapped up in his life. And he wants to show you the way to go. He wants to reveal that to you. But you must come to him without reservation, willing to accept his way to go. Some of you are in that place this morning and needing that direction. Comes back to his situation. Deliver me from my enemies, O Lord. Now, again, we don't have people chasing us, I don't think. But we do have enemies. We have a spiritual enemy. And sometimes we have our flesh. All the time. Who are our enemies? The world. And what we mean by to deliver me from those enemies. Dear soul, I have fled to you for refuge. You see how he's pulling at God's heartstrings? I trust in you. I fled to you for refuge. Teach me to do your will, for you are my God. All these commands are then undergirded by, I trust you, I plead refuge, you're my God. Friends, it's that godliness thing. It's the humility of the heart group. When we come to God, we do so knowing that he exists and that he rewards those who diligently seek him. He tells us that. If you want to know God, if you really do, seek him. I know that. That's one of the strongest encouragements I have as a pastor, that if someone presents themselves to me and I can tell that they sincerely want to know God, they're going to. They're going to. What a great thing. Let your good spirit lead me on level earth. The roller coaster, friends, it can be exciting on those high moments. It's frightening on those moments, and I get sick. There is my name for this request. Help keep my life in order so that I don't go from one extreme to the next. I believe that is Sue Barry's poem, and she's in the nursery. That is her purse. God bless her. Thanks, Bob. For your name's sake, O Lord, preserve my life. In your righteousness, bring my soul out of trouble. And in your steadfast love, you will cut off my enemies. And you will destroy all the adversaries of my soul, for I am your servant. What we have here, friends, we have David. And he has come to God and he has made strong demands. Not just requests. He hasn't said, will you? He said, you will. And he's done that because he knows the character of God. And this is it. That God continually and forever defends his own honor. It's his honor that gives anything dignity. Any dignity that we have is because God is pure dignity and pure honor. David's understanding that he can come to God and say, God, I need protection, I need provision, I need to have my soul relieved from this awful burden. I need to know that I have a future. All of those requests are not requests. Those demands are couched in this understanding. God defends his honor. No matter what befalls us, one of my favorite hymns, as I watched the British Open this week, and I see St. Andrews, and it's like my favorite place in the world I've ever been, was there. And I see just such Scottishness everywhere. There. That's the thing about when you go to Scotland, it's so Scottish. It isn't fake. People are dressed in tartan tweeds, and they wear their hats, and they speak with a brogue, and they eat haggis, and it's all these things. And it's just the way they are. When I watch that, I'm reminded, I had a niece and nephew who went to St. Andrews University. And they have a tradition there at graduation. If you see the blimp view of the course, there's the beach right there. Now that's the beach that in Chariots of Fire, you see them going. That's really shocking. Okay. And that's the exact soundtrack. Right above the beach is an ancient stone wall. Ancient. It's the Royal and Ancient Club. St. Andrews University graduates, in their robes and their mortars, although I don't think they were a cooler thing, they walk on top of that wall and they sing, and this goes back to the ancient roots of that university, they sing, "Be Thou My Vision." My sister's been there twice, and she doesn't have a dry eye to hear the students singing, "Be Thou My Vision." And there's a line in "Be Thou My Vision." It's this, whatever befall, whatever comes my way, whatever happens, still be my vision, O ruler of all. And that is our final argument with David. Whatever happens to me, don't let me stop trusting in you. And that has to be it. That has to be our vision. And I say that knowing that stuff's going to happen. But with David, we come to him and say, because of your honor, because I have been adopted by you for your glory, for your honor, for the dignity of your name, hold me. Uphold me. Whatever befall, hold me up. Still be my vision, O ruler of all.